Hi, everyone. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And today's episode is all about comic book editing and project management. And we're going to talk to somebody who knows a lot about comic book editing and project management, probably product management too at this point, Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience fame, formerly of the Hold On, Make Comics podcast as well. Andy? I feel like it's been twice in a year. It's like it's 2017 all over again.
Look at that. Just, everything moves in cycles, my friend.
That's if I ever learned anything from Watchmen advertising, it's nothing ever ends. It just gets rebooted 30 years later into a television show that might tangentially be related to the original property.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Tune in now, HBO, only on HBO. It is always great to talk to you, and we've talked a bit before recording, which is also always great. And this class that you have coming up is one that I think about a lot, just because so much of what I've had to learn on the comic side is what you're going to be talking about, and is valuable not just for people that want to get into the editing side, but if you're a creator doing your own creator-owned stuff, or even work for hire stuff. It's kind of all about project management in some ways, right? Or am I looking too close at it?
No. I mean, usually this is the thing people think of last,
right?
Well, this and where am I going to print this book? You know, so one of the things that when I started in comics, which is almost 20 years ago now, I started at a big publisher. I started at Marvel, and I was thrown right into the deep end working on Avengers and Fantastic Four and stuff like that. Now, I had a boss, which was good, and there was another assistant, Mark, that was in the office, and they were great at training me and getting me up to speed. But when I went freelance years later and was writing my own stuff, like, I had all of this sort of institutional ingrained knowledge about how to manage projects, how to work with creative people, how to organize, everything from organizing files to, putting the schedules together, when the schedule goes kaput, how to figure out from there, like how to readjust, all that kind of stuff. Even some of the legal stuff I knew pretty well. So like in terms of like contracts for folks and stuff. So then when I started Comics Experience, and we were really focusing on, the craft of writing and of art and storytelling, all that sort of stuff, when we first started back in 2007, and we were really trying to encourage and empower people to do their own work. Now, not everybody that wants to write comics wants to draw them, and not everybody that wants to draw them wants to write them.
Sure.
So we always knew there would be some overlap. Sometimes we try to encourage folks to work together if we think they're appropriate for a project. But pretty quickly you just realize when people start going out and they don't have that institutional knowledge when they're approaching their writing and putting books together, like how much work that really is.
Yeah.
And how much it will, just how much it affects the final outcome, I mean, one of the things that's nice, when working at Marvel is like, if I, working on Fantastic Four with Mark Waid and Mike Waringo, like, that isn't that hard of a book to edit.
Right. Honestly,
because they're so freaking good that there really wasn't, I remember reading one of Mark's scripts and literally emailing him and being like, yeah, there's a typo on page 4. Other than that, we're good. Like, I'll send it off to Mike, but that's not the case with everybody. And I mean, it's very, very rare that you read a script, even by somebody who's as talented as Mark, and as professional as Mark, that you can't see some way to hone it or improve it. So that's a lot of what the course is about, being able to look at story, at script and art, and being able to analyze it critically to make the storytelling better, to make the comic stronger. And then also to get into some of that minutia about like what, a lot of the problem solving stuff, because over the years, early on, I would wind up talking with students who'd come through and taking some courses, and they would say, I tried to put together like three projects, and they always fell apart. And I found myself going, well, what can I add to the writing course? And we cover a lot of stuff in the writing course about like breaking in and that sort of stuff, and how the industry works. But we don't, I mean, it's a whole nother course, to get into like how to actually manage a project. And it's not easy. Not everybody does it the same way. So for the editing class, we teach this class about once every 2 years, and we got it coming up here, November 25th, I think is when this one starts. So I've adjusted it a couple of times, and actually it's been taught by me and Nicole Boos and Mark Sumerak, who are all we're all former Marvel editors. But it's me again this time, and I've refined it again, because what I've found is that I've got people coming into this class that either want to learn what it's like to edit like at a publisher, like if this is your office job, how I started at Marvel, or when I was at IDW as a senior editor, like how does that work? And then I've got other people that want to know what's it like to edit, create your own stories. Like if I want to be a freelance editor and edit a thing here or there, but it's somebody else's work, it's not mine, somebody else's, but they own it. That's a very different type of editing work than working for the company, where the company owns the characters and you're hiring freelancers. And then the third kind of person that tends to come to this client is the type of person who's like, I want to make my own comics, right? I want to write it. Maybe they want to draw it, but they want to manage that project, and they want to see it through to the end. And they don't want, they want to figure out, how do I work with people? How do I talk to people to find out if they're going to stick around? Because unfortunately, that's a reality that is an issue, that a lot of times you wind up wanting to work with somebody, you agree to something, and then they fall off the face of the earth after they've started. That happens far too often. So that's really what the course is really about. And in some ways, the last one is the hardest, because you're self-editing. And so you are, at that point, you are, let's say you're a writer. This is usually how it works, is you're a writer. You're also going to be the editor of the whole thing. You're also the publisher and the financier a lot of times. So like you've got all these different hats on, and they sometimes pull you in different directions. And then add on top of that the difficulty of self-editing, like of being able to see flaws in your own work, or the flip side of that, which is all you see is flaws in your own work, which is a lot of folks I know are like that too. So, there's a lot of these techniques that I've figured out over time. Certainly when the first time I taught this, which was, I don't know, probably close to 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago. The first time I taught this, a lot of it was from the perspective of, I'm working at a publisher, and this is what it's like, and this is blah, blah, blah. And there was a lot of stuff that did help people, in doing their own things. They're like, it was really great to see how a professional editor does this. I was able to take it and adapt it. Well, around that time, I was starting to manage my own project. I was also being hired freelance to edit some friends' projects, over like, Image or wherever else, and quickly realize like how different that relationship is. So now that I've got a lot, now I've got 10 years of experience doing both of those things too, and seeing how it goes, that this course has really evolved to try and fill all of those needs. This time around, the emphasis is probably more on running your own project. Because there's really no version of this that it doesn't apply to, the other two. If you can do your own project, you should be able to do the other two with with some differences. But yeah, I mean, I think the self-editing, running your own project, is really, really difficult, and it's stressful in a way that the others aren't. And it's, you've got your money tied into it, you've got your time tied into it, and you've got something you really care about in the story that you're trying to tell tied into it. And it's all on your shoulders to convince some other people to help you do it, even if you're paying them. So it's very easy for somebody managing their own project to get, angry. very quickly, you're very upset because
yeah.
as soon as something goes wrong, you're like, it's my story, it's my money, it's, you know, it's my project, oh no.
Yeah, no,
you know,
there's,
it all just,
and
it
if
just builds.
Early on in your career or otherwise, I think there's different challenges the earlier you're doing it. And like you talked about having institutional knowledge of how something works, so much of it is you just learning. And, you know, next time you do it, it'll be faster and in theory better, and you'll make different mistakes or at least
Right.
try to stay ahead of the potholes along the way or the speed bumps along the way. But so much of it is just the learning process of learning. And like you said, when you're invested with your time and money, that's a big deal. There's a lot of folks that are doing creator-owned comics. You have a full-time job and maybe a family and occasionally try to sleep. So doing a comic is a big deal. It's an investment of, like you said, not just money, but also your time. And the project management end of things is huge. And get started doing a contract or get started searching for, I don't know, letter colorist. What should you pay them? There's so many factors that go into that swirl of, hey, I made an issue of a comic. It might have taken me a year because I had to learn how to do everything and learn how to think about it and learn how to network or interact in the industry with people and find out what I needed to give them and how to make it better. And, oh, how can we collaborate? And it didn't work out with this person. It fell apart like this.
Right. And one of the big things, too, is just realizing that none, like no pro editing. My words are failing me. Please, by all means, keep that in the episode.
No, we're going to bring in an editor. We're going to take care of it. We're going to flesh it out.
No two projects are the same when it comes to editing. And that's due to a couple of different things. But probably the single biggest one is personalities, right? You're dealing with people. And even if you're dealing with people you've dealt with before, there are different places in their lives, or they've got something something else that's going on, or they've got another big deadline, and you know, they're all of them are versions of negotiation, they're versions of compromise, they're versions of all of these things. And the more invested you are in a project, the more difficult that becomes to do for those reasons we were saying. Like, it's your story, it's your money, it's your time, it's potentially you're looking at this as, this is going to kickstart my career, so I need it done sooner. And then when somebody is not meeting the things that you agreed on, like maybe they're not missing their deadlines or whatever it is, you're not just reacting to that as just the financier or just the writer or just the publisher, right? You're reacting on all fronts, and it's very, very difficult to keep perspective and to keep in mind, you know, the ultimate objective. You know, so much of it has to do with casting, and this has become such a big thing. And again, I'm sure we could spend five more episodes talking about this in various fronts. But like, one of the things that I've discovered and frankly, we just started doing is we do what I call creative services now, where, you know, somebody emails us and says, I've got a story to tell, and this editing thing is a freaking nightmare. Like, it's a lot more work than I thought it was. What does it cost for you to do this for me? And then I go out and hire, you know, find the talent and go, okay, here's a couple of options. We talk through it. They're usually people that I have worked with before. So I've got some, you know, confidence we'll get it done. Every once in a while, I'll hire somebody new because not all projects are the same and might require a different type of artist or whatever. And when I do that, I'll say, hey, I've not worked with this person before, so let's see how it goes, and here's how we're going to evaluate how it's going. And yeah, I've had one or two where I've had to be the one that calls the person up and says, okay, we're done, we're going to find somebody else now. And
yep.
Hey, that's another nice thing to hire somebody else to do.
Yep.
So you don't have to make that call.
Sure. Yeah. It can be hard when you don't, when that hasn't been your position to have to hire and fire people. And maybe it's not for a super large amount of money. Hey, I need you to letter five pages, but if they're not delivering the lettering, you know, how are they going to deliver the lettering for the 22 pages next time? And yeah, it's a lot to negotiate and navigate.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's some insurmountable thing, because obviously it's not, but a lot of it has to do with being organized at the get-go. Like, if you're
Right.
organized at the beginning, you should be all right. Like, you should be able to pull it off. But again, and this is one of the things I loved about editing, when I was on staff, and actually I still like it, so I still do it. But one of the things I liked was that you get to wear so many hats. Like,
Right.
I like learning new things. I don't want to be a cog that does the same, that hammers the same nail on the same side of furniture all day long. Like, I want to do different things in my workday, and I'm very lucky that I have, built a business where I can do that. But if you don't, I also have the luxury of, when I do learn something new, I can learn one or maybe two things new at a time. Now I don't have to learn them all. And my first 6 months at Marvel was an unmitigated disaster. I thought I was going to be fired every day. There was so much, and I had even been an intern several years earlier for a summer. So, like, I even knew more or less what editors did at Marvel, and I went in, and I was not prepared. Like, I mean, I recently went up, just a few months ago, I went up to the offices at Marvel, and I walked into my old boss's office, Tom Brevoort, and he didn't know I was coming. I was having a meeting with some other folks. I hadn't had a chance to email him. And I walked into his office, and he immediately turns to his new assistant, and he says, "Hey, you remember how yesterday I was telling you about that assistant that nearly broke the double page spread, and I was going to fire him?" And she's like, "Oh yeah." And she's like, "Let me introduce Andy Schmidt." And I'm like, "Great, thanks, man." That's me. I'm that guy. Glad that lesson is being taught. I mean, it really was. I mean, the way it worked at Marvel at that time, and I don't think it's like that now. Again, for lots of reasons we can get into, but I don't think it's so much like that now. But you just got thrown into the deep end, and when you made mistakes, you learned from them and you moved on. And
Sure.
hopefully, in my case, Tom and Mark Sumerak, who were in the office before I was, caught stuff. In fact, that double page spread, Tom was out of town. I think he was at a convention or something when that went to print, and we got a proof back from the printer. It's the last stage in a process where you can make a change. And Mark read the proof and caught the double page spread. It's gonna get broken. So we did fix it. It didn't go out. It was on an issue of Spider Girl. But yeah, like, I mean, Tom got back and he's like, "If that had gone out that way, I'd have fired you." And like, he wasn't kidding. Tom
Right.
doesn't kid, about that stuff. So I mean, it was a, there's just so much to learn, so much to learn about, pagination, so much to learn about, the way you size files, so much to learn. It's just so much. And that 6 months, the other problem I had is, all getting into the woods, but the other problem I had was that Tom and Mark shared an office, and I was in an office down the hall, so I wasn't really seeing them work a whole lot. And so I think, I don't know for sure, but I think there came a point where it's like, we either need to let Andy go, or we need to figure out how to make this work. It was like, it was now or never. And they had Mark and me switch places. So then now I was in the office with Tom, our boss, and Mark, who'd earned more, freedom, and was starting to, was editing his own books. So that once I moved in that office, I started, like, really learning, because I saw everything. I saw how Tom did everything. I saw
Yeah.
exactly what he'd done. But and that probably saved not just my job, but my entire career. Like, I mean, I can't imagine how different my life would be if I'd gotten fired from that job. But anyway, that's really hard to do. Like, it was so much information and so many different aspects of all the stuff that we were doing, that it was really that second 6 months where I really learned, how to run projects. And by the end of the next 6 months, I was editing two titles myself, and Tom still oversaw them, but they were mine, to edit. And then from there, I just, got more and more stuff. But anyway, that's all to say, it's a lot. It's very, very daunting if you don't know what you're doing. And so a class like this is there to introduce you to everything. It's still going to be a lot of learning. Things are still going to be difficult, but you're going to have a much better chance of success with your first projects.
And I think
Hopefully, that's the idea.
and seeing the title is editing and project management, I think that's got to have a lot of appeal to a variety of creators, to be able to. Project management in and of itself is such an art. I know that's something that both Heather and Jim have talked about on this podcast, is so much of their jobs just being those things, project managing and traffic cop. It's a lot of what you talked about, the day-to-day operations, but also having to think about big picture stuff, especially if, you're doing a crowdfunding Kickstarter book that even if it's a single issue, it's still going to take a lot of time to make a single issue if it's one of your first or second times making a single issue, and then you're also trying to deliver at a certain time when you finish, but you also have to deliver that to a printer to hit that date, and you have to get all the assets from your teammates, whether you're, working with a writer or you're the artist, and you got to get it from everybody else, or you're the artist writer, you're the writer. It's such a, it's not something you can't get your arms around, but until you really start to drill down into it, you don't realize what you don't know, and it is a process.
It's the same thing that you face in the video production world, where it's a lot to handle, and it's a lot of different skills, and most people are capable of learning those skills, but learning them all at the same time on one project and having that project turn out well is tough. I mean, there's a reason why, the Marvel system was, we were putting out in my office, we were putting out something like 18 titles a month, 18 comics a month from my office.
Between how many people?
Three, maybe it was a little lower than that. It was maybe 14 or 15 when it was just Tom, Mark, and myself.
And you all are
But that's a
interacting
lot.
with creative teams that had to be what, 5 to 7 people maybe?
Yeah, usually probably around five people.
Yeah, so five times.
For each comic. And, some people worked on multiple books or whatever. And then you had all the other creative people that, filled in for an arc or for an issue, or, we were super behind and came in and filled in on just a few handful of pages.
Right.
So it was 6 months of putting out, being a part of a team of three and learning from the other two people of putting out 15 comics a month before I started to feel like I knew what I was doing. Like 6 months of that. It's like 100 comics
Yeah.
that we put out before I started to feel like I knew something.
Sure. Well, the project management class is coming up in November, like you mentioned. As far as other stuff with Comics Experience, I don't think you and I have talked since you were on talking about New York, but you went to New York Comic Con as well as Baltimore Comic Con, both of which have passed as of our recording, and it sounds like both were good shows. I know I've read some write-ups on your panels from New York Comic Con, which sounded great, and you were able to be there with SourcePoint Press and do a lot of New York things as well.
Yeah, mostly I eat really good food, as discussed on the podcast.
Hard not to do.
So no, New York was a really good show. It was one of the busiest times I've personally had at a show in quite a while. I had meetings constantly with various publishers and creators and all that kind of stuff, which was really good. And a lot of it was. A lot of it was to talk about some specific things, either between myself and a publisher or Comics Experience and creators or publishers or whatever. There's a lot of business stuff. There's also a lot, because I like to do this, especially because I'm in the education business for hopefully comic book creators, is a lot of sort of touching base on the industry. Like what have you guys seen changing, or how, what are you, what's changed in the last year? That you're looking for, if you changed your strategy on this or whatever, and having conversations like that with folks, I mean, I never want to, ask them anything that I think would violate any sort of, confidentiality thing. I mean, I just don't ask those questions. That's not my place to do that. But asking about industry trends or trends for their particular type of business or segments, like there's a lot of talk right now about YA in graphic novels. I think while we were in New York, I think the announcement came out that Raina Telgemeier is now the number one selling author, period. Not in
Right.
graphic novels, but just author. I mean, that's a big shift. That's a big deal, obviously. It's great for her. But, you know, there's just all this talk about, you know, where this industry is going, where it's leading. And staying on top of that and staying current with those, not just staying current with those trends, because I don't want to follow trends, but understanding what's beneath them and why some of those trends are occurring and what some of that thinking is I think really good. And helps inform myself and the other instructors of Comics Experience so that we can talk to that when people are in classes or they're on our creators workshop or wherever, which I think is only beneficial.
Right. That's shifting and changing the industry and how to get stuff out there to different people in different ways, much less work for hire and doing your own thing. And yeah, all the in betweens. It's very cool that both those are really good shows for, I think, catching up with people and depending on how you look at them. And Baltimore has always been a favorite since it's still so comics-centric for the most part. Not a lot of big media stuff or celebrities. It's still very, very comics. So if you like comics, definitely check out Baltimore next year. I'm a big proponent of that
Baltimore
show.
Baltimore was a ton of fun, and the panels there were great. And you know, it was easier to talk to creators in Baltimore than it was because they were still busy, which is good because you want them to be busy because you want them to make money while they're there. But they were more, you know, they had bigger space. Each creator had, you know, maybe 10 or 12 feet instead of 6 feet, you know, at their tables. So it was just a nicer, more comfortable space. You didn't feel packed in nearly as much. And yeah, it was fun. It was a really, really good show. I had only been to Baltimore once, like 10 years earlier. It happened to fall on my birthday weekend. And I think my son was like 2 years old or something like that. And so we went into the show for like an hour and a half. Maybe.
Right.
I saw a few people and left and was like, this is a show I want to come back to. It's taken me 10 years, but I finally got back there. And it's really great. And I hope to go back, you know, again many times.
Yeah, it's good. Definitely a good time if you haven't been. Well, comicsexperience.com is the best place to find you and what's going on there. I know the blog is regularly updated, as well as all the social media, and the newsletter is a great thing. If you're newer to the show and don't know the Comics Experience newsletter, there's a lot of good info in there that is just generally good information and interviews, as well as talking with people that are members of the community and what they're up to. So go check out comicsexperience.com. Anything else, Andy, before we go and get back to it?
No. Go make comics, people. Stop listening to podcasts and go make some comics.